يا خالق كل شيء وورثا.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Foresight, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Please stay with us. So, dear listeners, we are talking about some of the things that can become barriers when it comes to our ubudiyya, our obedience, our servitude, and our worship to Allah. Now, most of the time, people think about the things that can help them to strengthen their ubudiyya, their worship, and their obedience and their servitude to Allah. But another very important aspect of ubudiyya is to make sure to know the different kind of barriers and obstacles, and in some cases, those things which might even destroy not only our ubudiyya, our worship, and our obedience to Allah, but they could very well destroy us as well. One of the things which will we as somebody who's trying to increase and strengthen and level up our ubudiyya is to be very careful of something called riya. Riya is the Arabic word which translated loosely means showing off. Now, riya is kind of like, I guess the most appropriate word is showing off. But more than showing off, it is kind of showing, you know, it is displaying, it is wanting somebody to take notice of. Now, you might think, well, what is wrong with riya, with showing off, with displaying? Here, as we have said in our previous sessions, that the whole purpose of ubudiyya is to be focused on the Almighty Allah. And so here, not only is an individual totally and completely focused upon the Almighty Allah in their various types of worship and their various kinds of ubudiyya to the Almighty Allah, but at the same time that they are focused upon Allah, we have to realize that we are doing these things for Allah, for the sake of Allah, for gaining nearness to Allah, as it is said in Arabic, قُرْبَةً إِلَى اللَّهِ, or and, because we are doing these acts of worship and ubudiyya really for all of these intentions, meaning for the sake of Allah, on the path of Allah, in order to gain nearness to Allah, for the satisfaction of Allah. So this aspect is really important, that we are doing something for the sake of Allah, and we are doing something to gain nearness to Allah, and we are doing something in order to fulfill the commandments of Allah. And of course, we are doing these acts of worship and ubudiyya in order to satisfy and gain the pleasure of Allah. And so riya is something which is a barrier and an impediment to all of these things.
Ya Allah, ya Allah, ya Allah,
ya Allah, ya Mannan, haqqiq
amani. IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Ya Allah, ya Rahman, haqqiq amanina.
أجب دعائي يا رجائي بالرضا والخير أنر طريقي مع صديقي باحترام الغير.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Hamza Yusuf.
The ideal Islamic polity was during the life of the Prophet and I mean, women, what the Quran told them to do was to cover themselves, and they did it. And obviously, every society has standards. So the America has a hijab, England has a hijab, and they impose it by law. You cannot walk naked in the West. It's illegal. You'll be arrested. So that is an imposition of a hijab law. But who determines what the boundaries or the hudud of that are, right? I mean, this is the debate. So in Islam, you know, the free woman's awra is defined, whereas in the West, the awra is defined by the social standards. 100 years ago in the West, a woman could have been arrested for wearing a miniskirt, right? Because it would have been considered public lewdness, and she would have been arrested. Well, that's not the case anymore. So standards, those social standards change. The Sharia doesn't change. These are thawabit in Sharia. So people can't come now, 1400 years later, and tell us, oh, 1400 years the Muslims got it all wrong. Now, you know, in this great enlightened age of Islamic illumination, we've realized what the Quran really meant. You know, that argument is patently absurd, because one, the Sahaba understood the Arabic, and the Prophet ﷺ was there to show them, and we have the hadith, and people say, oh, they want to condemn the hadith and say, well, I don't believe in the hadith. There are mutawatir hadith that you cannot condemn. If you condemn them, it's the same. Because we have, you know, we have an epistemology. Just like the West has an epistemological approach to things, Muslims have an epistemological approach to things. So we have mutawatir, that's part of our epistemology. We have ahad, that's part of our epistemology. We have akhbar, we have dhaniyat, we have hadsiyat, we have wahmiyat. These are all part of the epistemological approach of Muslims. A mutawatir khabar is 100% epistemologically sound. It's factual. So if the Prophet ﷺ said something and it's mutawatir, and you deny it, it's denying the Qur'an. It's the same, because the Qur'an is mutawatir. And so there's these people who say, oh, I only accept the Qur'an, the Qur'aniyun. They've already rejected the Qur'an.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is parstoday.com.
Welcome back, dear listeners. In continuation to what we were saying, which was this idea that riya is the completely opposite aspect of ubudiyya that is pure and sincere. Now, we were talking about some of the barriers that can come about when it comes to our ubudiyya, and barriers which not only hurt our ubudiyya but can very well destroy ourselves. So we had said that riya is this displaying, this showing off, this showing in general. It's almost like a parade, you know, which is done in order for people to witness. Now, we had said that, of course, our ubudiyya, our servitude and our obedience and our worship to Allah, of course, is all centered and focused upon the Almighty Allah. But riya, because in the previous segment we didn't really talk about what exactly riya does, or what is the physical manifestation of riya. And so that's what we want to talk a little bit about, so that we can avoid it. This displaying, what it is that these worships that you do, and this obedience to Allah, this servitude to Allah, this ubudiyya is done in order for people to witness, right? So instead of the purpose of the ubudiyya to be for Allah to witness, it is done for people to witness. Now, here there's a very sensitive discussion which should be had. Now, for example, worshiping so that people witness you worshiping, so that they are encouraged to worship, there is nothing wrong in that. Matter of fact, it's recommended. So in your house, it is recommended to pray the daily prayers in front of your children so that they are encouraged to pray. But here, we have to be careful that our intention must not be in order for our children to say, wow, dad or mom, they pray so much. Right? Now, this is for the household, which the intention is, you know, it can be relatively controlled. But now, for example, in the masjid, our prostration, our sajda becomes longer when people are looking at us. Or our ruku, our genuflection, it becomes longer because people are looking at us. Or our tilawat, our recitation, and our pronunciation of the Holy Quran becomes so much better when people are looking at us. Now here, if the intention is to encourage people, there isn't anything wrong with that. But we have to be very, very careful, for there are times that we do this so that the people appreciate us, so that the people look up towards us, so that the people admire us, so that the people honor us. Common denominator is the people. We should not be doing our acts of worship and our ubudiyah for the people's attention or the people's satisfaction or the people's appreciation. This is riya. And it will waste every single one of our acts of ubudiyah if we allow riya and this showing off and this displaying to become a part of our intention. So we must be very, very careful to not allow riya into our ubudiyah and to make sure that our ubudiyah, our servitude and our worship and our obedience to Allah is purely for the Almighty Allah. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. أحتمي بحما حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير حسبنا الله يوسف جلالي بتهران روباشافت غازا جروم هيوز بروسلز سعيد بورزا لندن راشا ساقلم اسطنبول سيد أمين عالمي Kabul. Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir. Around the world with reporters. I'm heading with pro-Russian forces to the front line, just outside the city of Donetsk. We move at a fast pace, as there is constant incoming and outgoing at these positions. Suddenly we are told to run as we reach open ground. The pro-Russians had just fired a heavy artillery barrage. The Ukrainians will most likely respond in kind. We reach the trenches. Opposing them is the Ukrainian stronghold of Adievka. For 8 years, the Ukrainians have been digging in, creating a complex network of underground bunkers. It will be one of the greatest challenges for Russia in this war so far. This fighter is an Abkhazi volunteer from the south of Russia. I asked him why he came to fight in Donbass.
Это наше общее святое дело рядом с Россией.
It's our common sacred task to stand by Russia. We understand that an unjust war is going on. This territory is Russian land. Unfortunately, NATO and the USA are trying to make use of the collapse of the USSR. And you see the results of this work. Unfortunately, people die in war. And Russians and Ukrainians are fraternal peoples.
Now, about a month ago, I was in a frontline position not far from here, and it was pretty quiet. Now, the situation has changed as the pro-Russian forces here are trying to move forward into different positions. The Russian army is far to the north of here. There's a feeling that before making a full push, they will wait for the Russian army to come down and help to encircle Adiyevka. But for the moment, they're trying to keep the Ukrainian positions occupied. That's why there's so much incoming and outgoing from this position. While NATO and Ukraine have been declaring for months that morale is low this side of the battle lines, all the pro-Russian fighters I've spoken to over 2 months here clearly have high morale. They're in no doubt they will take Adiyevka soon, as well as the rest of Donbass. And they believe they are fighting for a worthy cause.
They know perfectly well Russia doesn't target civilians, so they set up their positions where civilians are. We have sympathy for these civilians, but we will liberate them. And for those who force the Ukrainians to fight, for the Nazis, we do not have any sympathy. The card, as ever, was played by the Americans. It should be realized, Ukraine doesn't need this war. Their minds are not clear. They were left no choice but to fight by NATO.
While Ukraine is putting up a fierce defense in Donbass, the advantage is Russia's, with its overwhelming artillery superiority. As this conflict approaches its sixth month, soldiers are dying for each kilometer of land. Johnny Miller, Donbass.
Five rounds of voting by UK Conservative MPs have produced the final two candidates for party leader. It's now down to Tory party members to decide who will be the next leader of not just their own party, but the country too. The finalists, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, are lining up for their final showdown to become Boris Johnson's successor. The winner set to be announced on September the 5th, following a vote among the 160,000 or so members. While members have been given a full month to vote, experience from past similar postal ballots suggests that many members will probably decide on who they want to vote for immediately, casting their ballots as soon as they get the chance to do so. So that means that the two candidates will have to rely on a rapid, hard-hitting initial start to their campaign in order to try and grab as many to their side as they possibly can. The Conservative dogfight has raised concerns within Tory ranks that bitter divides are being exposed to the public, further damaging the party's overall image.
The comments made in the debate were really more personal in nature and really relating to people's performance and particular minutiae of policy. There aren't really substantial differences in the Conservative Party. There may be slight disagreements on we shouldn't have put the taxes up or you should have originally been a Leaver, but now they're all signed up to taking Britain through the Brexit process, which, contrary to some, is still continuing because there's unfinished business from leaving the European Union. But really the differences are slight and have been somewhat exaggerated.
The two candidates must now travel across the country and tackle questions from members. With the economy in crisis, party reputation on the rocks, and even greater issues with foreign policy, whoever wins will have serious work to do. Robert Carter, London.
They can make people laugh, impersonate voices, or sing. The stage for talents. The 5th International Stage Stars Festival brought together participants from 14 countries, including Iran, Afghanistan, India, and Turkey, to get on stage and perform in Iran's city of Rafsanjan.
I come from Bangladesh. I have participated in the hosting section. It's an amazing festival for the likes of me who pursue their dreams.
I am participating from Iraq. I'm so glad to have the opportunity to show my talent here in this event.
I have to represent our culture, Indian culture, and when I was in the start in the Tehran, then how I managed to live, because I didn't know the Persian language.
The contest has four categories of singing: stand-up comedy, show hosting, and sound impression. Contestants say this stage provides a shortcut to their success.
I'm so happy to be able to take part in this international talent contest. It provides a great opportunity for stage talent to be seen and shine in their favorite fields.
Stage Stars is a good chance for singers, sound impressionists, and stand-up comedians to be discovered. It's a big leg up for them.
The jury is comprised of top Iranian actors, TV presenters, and voice artists. They say only their real talents will be picked for the top prize.
This is a competition between the professionals of stage performance. There is no chance for a mistake. Each contestant here has a strong background in their expertise, so this stage is not the starting point, but a milestone for their careers.
One interesting part of this festival is the participation of international talents, who are mainly students from other countries who study in Iran. There's a separate competition dedicated for foreign participants.
All of the contestants, even those who come from foreign countries, must perform in Persian. However, organizers plan to include other languages in the upcoming editions of the festival. The top performances from each category will win the golden mic, plus a cash prize.
Organizers say this contest seeks to scout for those who really have a knack for stage performance and to bring them under the spotlight. So to those who nab the golden mic here, this stage is a springboard toward their ambitions. Yusuf Jalali from the city of Rafsanjan.
The European Commission is asking EU member states to reduce demand for gas by 15% until spring. For now, this is just a request, but the Commission warns it might well become a demand.
The 15% are aspirational. It's a voluntary goal. It's aspirational. And in case that we are in an emergency, then the target becomes binding.
The EU claims it's concerned that Russia will cut off all gas supplies in retaliation for sanctions imposed by the West over the war in Ukraine.
Shortfalls will not just affect the countries where the shortfalls happen. They will affect every single member state because they will have serious consequences on our economy. And nobody can escape that consequence.
The truth is, Russia has fulfilled all its energy supply contracts to the EU and vows to continue doing so. Some analysts believe the US and its transnational companies are behind the hysteria because they want to take business from Russia's Gazprom Energy Corporation.
The whole rhetoric today is based on imaginary threat, which was never confirmed by Russian authorities, because on contrary, Russian authorities said on many occasions, and including the President Putin, that Gazprom will honour their contracts.
Since Russia's so-called special military operation was launched in Ukraine last February, the EU has been importing large amounts of liquefied natural gas from the United States. It's an expensive process. The bloc is also signing contracts with countries in Africa and the Middle East. During a technical briefing here for journalists, officials confirmed to me there has been no contact with Iran on increasing EU energy supplies, despite the Islamic Republic having enormous oil and gas reserves. In this regard, analysts say the EU continues to bow to US pressure, and it's ordinary citizens who are paying the price for that. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
You don't have to be a financial expert to know your pound just isn't going as far. The price of everything has gone up. Living in the UK has become more expensive.
I've had to cut down on a lot of stuff. I can do shopping only maybe once, twice a month because finances are not that great. See, most money goes on bills, petrol, to get the kids to school, come back and, you know, make sure the house is in order because obviously the kids have to eat.
We've seen a dramatic increase in it whereby we could go and spend X amount and that would be for 7 days. We're now going, actually, that's not even covering the whole week now.
The things contributing to the high rate of inflation: soaring energy, fuel and food prices, driven by a number of factors.
Those causes are very often related to Ukraine and Putin and the war, because what we know is that has pushed up gas and electricity prices. There are also transport costs have been going up because of logistical problems following the coronavirus. Then, of course, we've got the problem of Brexit.
And the worst is yet to come. Britain's central bank has warned price rises could hit 11% later this year, but will come down in the year after. Experts say the UK could be at risk of recession.
The Bank of England's got it wrong as usual. So it will come down, but it will be much more persistent than anybody is anticipating. And to get it back down to 2% could take at least 3 years, not two, not one. And it's going to take a long time, actually, because it's now embedded in the system. And people will want to catch up. You see, the public sector, they're going to take a big real wage cut this year, probably, but they're not going to tolerate that the following year.
The government says one way to contain inflation is to suppress wages. Prices are going up, but incomes are not keeping up. That has meant sweeping rail strikes over demands for higher pay. Some public sector workers, such as teachers and medics, have received a pay rise, but below the inflation rate.
These are tough times for everybody, but it's those on the lowest incomes who are feeling the pinch. According to one study, more than 4 million, that's one in six British households, are worse off now than they were last year. A number that could change come the cold season. Saeed Purizab, London.
Illegal and politically motivated. That's how angry protesters describe a Swedish court ruling sentencing Iranian national Hamid Nouri of life in jail over participating in killing imprisoned dissidents. Nouri is a former judiciary staff who has been convicted by the Stockholm District Court on July 14th of taking part in the 1988 execution of members of the anti-Iran terror group Mojahedin-e-Khalq organization, while he served as an assistant to the deputy prosecutor at the Gohardasht prison outside the Iranian city of Karaj. Protesters here warn that the Swedish verdict has sent negative signals to Iranians.
We gathered outside the Swedish embassy today to demand an end to Sweden's circus trial of Hamid Nouri.
Sweden has no jurisdiction to rule on a case that's considered a domestic issue in Iran. Besides, all of the witnesses who testified against Mr. Nouri were members of a terror group and have never seen Nouri in person in Iran.
The accusations were leveled against Nouri by members of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq terror group, or MKO. Protesters here say the MKO itself has committed countless war crimes, from aiding former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein in the 1980s Iran-Iraq war to the serial killings of Iranian statesmen and civilians in the early years after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. The MKO was on the U.S. and EU's blacklist of terrorist organizations before both countries delisted the group in 2012 and 2009, respectively.
The MKO have the blood of at least 12,000 Iranians on their hands. They have no position amongst Iranians, and we call them the hypocrites here in Iran. So I want to tell the Swedish prosecutor that a ruling is tantamount to approving the crimes committed by MKO terrorists against Iranians.
Iran says Hamid Nouri has for the past 32 months been kept in abysmal conditions in a solitary confinement in Sweden. Hamid Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Sweden at Stockholm Airport in 2019 and was immediately imprisoned. A life sentence in Sweden generally means a minimum of 20 to 25 years in prison. Nouri can appeal the verdict. Protesters here called the whole shebang as a political game aimed at smearing the Islamic Republic's justice system. They described the Swedish ruling as rabble-rousing, which whitewashes terrorism and gives a green light to the ill intentions of the MKO against Iranians. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iran's flagship carrier, Iranair, has returned to Rome from July 14. A new deal recently signed between Iranian and Italian aviation authorities has revived the route connecting Tehran and Italy's capital, Rome. The deal is a revised version of previous aviation cooperation agreement, which stresses the importance of increased flights between the two countries to help boost economic ties and tourism.
I visited Iran 20 years ago, and I've been thrilled about that trip. I'm going again with a group of friends in September, and we're all very excited.
There has certainly been a more intense dialogue between Italy and Iran lately, and this is extremely positive. Having said that, we are still facing enormous difficulties due to the sanctions. However, we are confident that more European routes will be added by Iran Air in the future.
Iran Air, which has been flying to Italy for 55 years, also operates flights to the business-focused city of Milan in the north of the country. Aviation ties between Iran and Italy took a hit in 2018 when the US unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 deal known as the JCPOA. Washington's withdrawal was followed by a wave of anti-Iran sanctions by the US.
I hope this resumption of the Tehran-Rome route will bode well for another resumption, that of the JCPOA, from which the U.S. unilaterally withdrew in 2018. It would be really important for tourism and commerce that flight connections between Iranian and European cities are established.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian traveled to Rome last week to meet his Italian counterpart and discuss the latest geopolitical developments across the globe. During that visit, Iran's top diplomat also met with tens of Italian industrialists and businessmen who showed a strong interest in cooperating with Tehran. Max Civili, Rome.
As temperatures in Britain soar, the race for the next Conservative Party leader is also heating up. Following further eliminations, now only three candidates remain. On Monday, Tom Tugendhat was eliminated during the third round vote, whilst Kemi Badenoch went out in the fourth. Rishi Sunak remains in the lead. Penny Mordaunt is close in second place, followed by Liz Truss. However, as the fight intensifies, things are turning bitter, with attacks on policy, along with accusations of ideological treachery, leading to candidates refusing to appear on future televised debates. Pundits believe the divisive race has exposed deep-rooted splits in the ruling party at a time when Britain faces numerous economic crises.
A senior Conservative journalist said to me that he found the entire leadership campaign wholly depressing. He thinks that it's been a competition to be negative. He thinks it's a race to the bottom in terms of showing what's wrong with the others rather than what's right with themselves. And crucially, we see a party divided. It seems to me that the Conservatives are going through an identity crisis, perhaps partly caused by Boris Johnson, who is a populist, without a very clear philosophy. Now, the next leader has to refocus the Conservatives on its more traditional values.
There can be little doubt in Rishi Sunak achieving a place in the final round, as he only requires five more supporters in order to achieve that place. However, the real battle will be over who joins him in second place. Two candidates will last into the final round, and then, of course, it goes to the votes from the Tory party membership to decide who the next leader of the party, and therefore the country, will be. Robert Carter, London.
During a joint press conference, which followed the latest round of their Astana process talks, Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi welcomed the Russian and Turkish presidents, along with their accompanying delegations, to the summit. Raisi stressed the need to protect the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Syria, as well as the importance of the fight against terrorism.
Discussions focused on the sovereignty of Syria and the territorial integrity of the country, emphasizing that the Syrian government must rule over all parts of the country and that the presence of Americans on the eastern banks of the Euphrates is not acceptable and they must withdraw and all parts of the country must be governed by the legitimate government. We all emphasize that we should combat terrorism and there is the need to do so and there is also a need for cooperation among all states. Today, terrorist currents have jeopardized the security of the region. The all-out fight against terrorism by the Islamic Republic of Iran was a successful experience. I commemorate Lieutenant General Soleimani as the icon of resistance and combating terrorism. All countries have fought against terrorism, but today there are concerns about the presence of terrorists in Syria. So there is a need for firm results to be achieved by all states that participate in the fight against terrorism.
Russian President Vladimir Putin echoed similar remarks and highlighted the importance of the Astana process.
We agreed. In order to normalize the situation in Syria, all three countries have agreed that full settlement of the conflict is only possible through political means and holding talks based on UNSC Resolution 2254, and while observing the basic principle of sovereignty and territorial integrity and unity of Syria. All these principles must be respected, and the future of Syria must be dictated by its own people, and nothing should be dictated from the outside.
Putin added that all sides have called for the continuation of the fight against terrorism and extremism so that such threats will be eliminated. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, while echoing the remarks made by his counterparts, also pointed out the importance of finding a sustainable political solution to the Syrian situation.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a very significant and important question. And this question is about the meaning of the word ad-dunya, the world. You know that the concept of the world, this concept, dunya, is very central and significant in Islam. Constantly, we see references in the Quran to the dunya, the world, you know, and in the hadith as well, you know, and in general, right, when this word is used, right, we see that it has been used in a negative connotation, right? So, for example, we have a hadith, hubbu dunya, رَأْسُ كُلِّ خَتَئٍ. The love of the world is the root, is the head and the root of every evil, right? But unfortunately, there's a certain ambiguity regarding the meaning of this word, right? The meaning of this word. What exactly does it mean? And this causes confusion. So we need to kind of examine this and elucidate this so that, you know, there is no misgivings and the world which has been cursed and which has been alluded to as the root of all evil may be demarcated and distinguished and determined. When we look at the Holy Quran and we look at the verses of the Holy Quran and the Hadith, we see in general, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He refers to as His creation as His signs, His ayat, right? Right. So His creatures, Allah refers to Him as His signs, things that lead, and we know that a sign or an ayah is something which leads one to the thing that it is a sign of, right? So the creatures of God, being signs of God, being His ayat, right? They should lead us to Him. So how could this the actual world itself, in the sense of everything other than God, everything that is a creature of God, that has been created of God, how could that be cursed, right? Or for example, we have in the Holy Quran, some verses which say that God refers to Himself as the being who is the khaliqu kulli shay, the creator of everything. And then in another verse we see, He says that, وَالَّذِي أَحْسَنَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ خَلَقَهُ, that everything that he created in a good way, with husn, with goodness, with beauty, right? So when we put these two verses together, right, and then they form a sort of syllogism, a syllogism, and says that everything has been created by God, everything is a creature of God, and everything that is a creature of God is good. So everything is good. So we can't say that the dunya that is being referenced to and has been cursed in the hadith and also in the Quran is the actual creature of God. Right? Rather, we have to say that it is the things that lead one away from God. Right? Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We're looking at the meaning of the world and the dunya. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is IRIB English Radio. Website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Human rights defenders were disappointed when the U.S. administration approved a $650 million air-to-air missile sale to the Royal Saudi Air Force and a $500 million support services contract for Saudi military helicopters. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Brett Wilkins, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Human Rights Watch to U.S. Stop Selling Weapons to Saudis. Here's the story. As U.S. President Joe Biden met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman recently, a top official at Human Rights Watch implored the American leader to not lift the ban on the sale of certain weapons to the repressive monarchy as it continues waging an atrocity-laden war in Yemen. Responding to reports that the Biden administration is considering ending its vague proscription against the transfer of offensive weaponry to Saudi Arabia, Michael Page, Human Rights Watch's West Asia North Africa region deputy director, warned that such a policy reversal could lead to fresh rights violations in Yemen. Since the beginning of the war in 2015, Human Rights Watch and other groups have documented how the Saudi-led United Arab Emirates-led coalition has used U.S. weapons in apparent unlawful airstrikes, including apparent war crimes, wrote Page, adding, the U.S. government's own report has detailed oversight failures on these sales. More than 300,000 Yemenis have died during the seven-year war, 150,000 of them as a direct result of military action, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, ACLED. A Saudi-led blockade of Yemen has exacerbated the starvation and disease in the war-torn nation of 30 million inhabitants. Human Rights Watch has called for the suspension of all sales, both offensive and defensive, to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, said Page, adding, renewing U.S. offensive weapon sales to Saudi Arabia would further undermine Biden's promise to prioritize human rights in U.S. relations with the country. Shortly after taking office, Biden, who while campaigning for president, vowed to make Saudi Arabia a pariah over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist, and other human rights crimes, imposed a temporary freeze on arms sales on the country and coalition partner UAE. Human rights defenders were subsequently disappointed when the Biden administration approved a $650 million air-to-air missile sale to the Royal Saudi Air Force and a $500 million support services contract for the Saudi military helicopters. Recently, the U.S. House of Representatives approved an amendment to the $839 billion National Defense Authorization Act that limits U.S. weapons transfers to nations and armed forces implicated in human rights crimes. Also recently, Senators Bernie Sanders, Patrick Leahy, and Elizabeth Warren introduced a resolution to end U.S. involvement in the Saudi-led U.S.-supported war on Yemen, which Sanders called unauthorized and unconstitutional. This war has created the world's worst humanitarian crisis today, Sanders added, and it is past time to end U.S. complicity in those horrors.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear friends. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to Lantern. On the continuation of Lantern, we have an interesting story. I invite you to listen to it. A dying old man said to his doctor while on the sickbed, "Doctor, don't worry. I know I'm going to die. I didn't want to come here, but they brought me here. Please don't worry about me. Look at my hair. They are gone. I'm so old, but you're so young. I have learned a lot from life. If you don't mind, I will tell you some of them before I die. When I wanted to enter the university, I wanted to study zoology, but everyone said I should study engineering, that I will be a great engineer. So I listened to them. I had no one to pay my fees. I had to work and also pay my fees. In my third year, I couldn't cope with my studies. I had to drop at 40. I got a huge contract. My name was in the news. The next day, all my friends and families were at my house. Everyone had a serious problem. Within 1 week, I spent all the money on them with the promise that they will pay back. I could not complete the contract because they refused to return the money as promised. So I was sent to jail for 6 years. I stayed in jail and I came out. When I came out, they were nowhere. There was one mistake I made through all this time. Now it's clear to me. I refused to listen to myself. I ignored my own self and listened to others. Now that I'm here, the only person that is with me is myself. You see, it's very wise to seek advice from others, but it's very dangerous to ignore your own self. The only person that can overrule yourself is Allah, after Allah listened to yourself next. I know it may not make sense to you now, but always remember, I told you, learn to listen to yourself. That was our today's story, now the continuation of it. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin as-Sin. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with why some people may want to misuse us or benefit from our help for the unfavorable or unwelcome purposes. It has happened to all of us. I mean, I'm sure that everybody has experienced it, that some people may approach you and may say that they are in dire need of your help, but the minute you help them, you find that the earlier plans or the aims were not anything that you would agree with in the beginning. In this connection, you must be informed that in some cases, some people may come to approach you in order to receive your help because they already know that if they do those jobs on their own later on, when the whole case would be found out and would be disclosed, they wouldn't be able to justify whatever they committed or whatever they did. Rather, they make you involved in the project, and although initially they came to you and suggested you to help them, later on they would say that, okay, I did this because of the presence of such and such a person in the project, or for example, he inspired me to do so. I had no idea of right in the beginning. He was the person who gave me this idea to do this. He suggested me to do this and that. There are some characteristics that because of which there may be some characteristics in you because of which such people come to you and approach you. The first one is that they realize that you are not such a person to give a negative answer right in the beginning, quite abruptly and quite sharply. You have to know that you must be well prepared that if a project isn't good, or for example, if a wrong project or a dangerous project is proposed to you, you must be able to give a negative answer right away in the beginning. Okay? Someone may come to you and ask your help. I mean, he may ask your help in order to, for example, cheat on the exam day. Right from the beginning, reject his offer or reject his request and say that, no, I'm not such a person to help you. And if I notice you that you are cheating on the exam in the exam session, I report it to the authorities of the university.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story, which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
In that case, you will find that that person who has already come to you in order to misuse you, or in order to make a wrong use of your capabilities, will turn away right from the beginning. At the same time, you might be afraid of that, okay, if you give that person a negative answer, sometime later in the future, you might ask something of that person and he might do the same with you later on, okay? At the same time, you must know that, okay, when you want to give a negative answer, you have to mention your own reasons for doing so. Okay, explain to the person that, okay, you know that this isn't a good job. You know that, okay, this is regarded as an offense, as a crime, and, well, anybody who does it, and, I mean, the... And he or she will be found while doing this or that. Okay, he or she will be punished. And as I don't want to be punished, and as I respect my own honor, my own status in my own community, I'm not such a person to accompany you or to help you or, I mean, to do anything for you. So long as you may want to accomplish, you may want to do something wrong. At the same time, we find that such a kind of negative answer may not make you such a kind of negative answer may not make you to remain or to be shown to be represented as an uncompromising person. Rather, other people know that whenever they come to you with any project, first of all, you are going to calculate it. You are going to weigh the whole situation. You might wish to receive the approval of everybody. This is utterly impossible. Thank you.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ana bi dhikrillahi
tatma'innul qulub. Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the